Voices of VR podcast. Hello, my name is Ken Pai, and welcome to the Voices of VR podcast. It's a podcast that looks at the structures and forms of immersive storytelling and the future of spatial computing. You can support the podcast at patreon.com/voicesofvr. So I'm going to be diving into my IFA DocLab coverage. So IFA is an international documentary film festival of Amsterdam, and DocLab started in 2007 and is featuring all sorts of like new media, immersive nonfiction, digital storytelling. And so they're really kind of an interdisciplinary fusion of all these different types of practices above and beyond just virtual reality, but anything that has kind of an immersive quality, but also using digital technologies to tell stories, or sometimes even no digital technology at all, just using paper within a box to be able to have an emergent co-creative theater experience. And so I had a chance to go to DocLab and see all the various experiences and interview as many artists as I could possibly have a chance to talk to. And so I'm really excited to dive into this series, because whenever I go to one of these film festivals, artists that are being shown there are kind of tapping into a deeper archetypal zeitgeist of the current themes of the moment. And DocLab usually names that theme. This year, their theme that they're going with was off the internet. So the first number of interviews that I'm doing are projects that were really kind of in this theme of off the internet. So projects that were both reflecting upon digital technologies, the internet, algorithmic realities, and kind of taking this critical look at our current world that we're in today. You know, ISPs came around in 1989, and then 2007 was around kind of like the midpoint between now and 1989. Like, that's when DocLab was started, 19 years ago. And so that's when the iPhone came out, and that was kind of like a portal that allows us to escape into these other realms. And we're all kind of addicted to our smartphones. And there's kind of a reckoning with the influence of all social media and these digital technologies are having in our broader society. So lots of artists were kind of reflecting on this to a certain degree, certainly with AI coming into the mix as well. So there's a number of projects that are diving into that. So the winner of the immersive nonfiction is the first project that I'm going to be starting with. It's called Feedback, and anti-futurist musical. And so it's by a collective called A Mixer, and the director is Claudix Van Essex, and also a couple of their collective members of Kokampi and Aaron Medina are joining in this conversation, but they're kind of a part of Indian futurism and a broader movement of futurisms in the global south that are taking critical looks at the role of technology. And one of the points that they're bringing up in this conversation is just how, you know, we can all feel the colonizing impact of artificial intelligence and how it's sort of destroying culture in a certain way. And one of the points that Claudix makes in this conversation is that a lot of the folks that are living in the global south have already had their cultures destroyed by colonization. And so to a certain extent, the apocalypse has already happened. And so with this anti-futurist musical, they're trying to make the point that the future is already colonized. So as we think about the future, there's a colonizing of that future. And so they're really trying to push back on that. And in the piece, it's a 360 video. They're using different types of like psychedelics and indigenous practices to kind of go onto this trip. And they go into this like vapor wave world, and there's all these wild animations, and there's just a lot of catchy tunes within the musical that is speaking around a lot of these themes that are critiquing our current day technology. And so it was, I think, really resonant with the jury. And this is actually one of my favorite conversations that I had this year at DocLab, just because it is pulling out and elaborating on all these themes that we're all thinking about. So we're covering all that and more on today's episode of the Voices of VR podcast. So this interview with Claudix, Kompi, and Aaron happened on Sunday, November 16th, 2025 at IFA DocLab in Amsterdam, Netherlands. So with that, let's go ahead and dive right in.
I am Claudix Van Essex. I'm the director of Feedback, an anti-futuristic musical, the VR and the DOM version. And I'm here together with Kokompi and Aaron. We are part of a Peruvian collective called A Mixer, which is the creator of this film. Kokompi was in the role of composing and sound design, and Aaron was director of animation. So that you know how to direct the questions maybe a bit. Yeah.
Yeah, so my name is Kokompi, and we made together the music, and I was mainly focused on handling the sound design and overall piece, and for the two versions. And we started working as a collective since 2021, I think, from around it, and now is finally making this happen, so happy to be here.
Hi, I'm Aaron Medina. I'm like the digital artisan of Amixer. I'm the last, el último injerto que ha habido. I'm the last one to be united to the collective. Yes, I directed the 3D animation and everything that you can see that's in 3D.
Awesome. And so maybe each of you could give a bit more context as to your background and your journey into working with this medium.
Okay, so I've been working as a performance artist since I was a child, actually. But in the last years, in collaboration with Kokompi and Amixer, it was a specific experimentation on how to stage XR. So this project that now is not a performance, started as a performance that had many showcases that involved the same performers that you see in the film, which is Lupe, Isa, and myself. And instead of having the users put on the headset, it would be us who put on the headset and allow you to see how that impacts our perception of reality. So through the years, the concept was growing and the medium became what it is. It had some moments where we thought it would be interactive, but as a collective, we decided that part of our audience was our people, and our people could not host a PC VR experience. We could not host a PC VR experience, and we organize events in which other artists can show their films, which, you know, are experimental media themselves. But our community is not so materially robust as Europe. So we decided to take the direction of going for MP4 format, for example. So there's a lot of political decisions that we took in the past years of development of the project that made it go for multiple media, but until arriving to what it is right now. So it was a performance, then it was an interactive experience for 6 degrees of Freedom VR. Then we ended up doing a stereoscopic version, and you know, yesterday we were at the premiere of a dumb version as well. So I think it's very flexible, and it's because the collective itself, we don't take much rigid roles. For example, I am taking the role of directing, but we cannot say I took all the decisions at all. It is always been consulted, and in the many years of the making of the script also, it has been shaped by how multidisciplinary the members of the team are.
So in my case, I come from studying music composition. And for this project in particular, it was very challenging to try to make a musical out of it. But we always said that next work we would do together would be a musical. We wanted to sing. We wanted to do it with our own voices. And we wanted to make it very like a handcraft work, a very like intimate, and build it in the spot. So that's how we approached the songs. We did some drafts, and from there we started improvising too, and we collected a lot of ideas from different genres that would eventually clash so that they would merge in this type of very mixed approach to the musical. I think we incorporate the performance part, we incorporate digital senses of our generation, and also we try to put in the forefront sounds and instruments and melodies that reminds ourselves of our history, our, you know, our sense of belonging, which belongs to our traditions and what we are currently performing right now. So I think it all worked out that way.
I think in Peru you have to do a lot of stuff as an artist to live. So visually, and I think that sonically too, we are a mix of a lot of activities and disciplines and approaches. So I like that about that movie. And you can see even the physical volumetric bodies of the performers in the movie are made of distinct parts and techniques to become this embodiment of virtuality and culture that we use, like in every corner of the movie.
And it seems like very much a collective that is creating this piece. And so is this the first piece of Emixer? Or maybe just give a bit more context for how this collective came together.
it came together by, well, Kokompi and myself are collaborators for a long time before Amixer existed, and we were already thinking, okay, so we've done so many things together now, we should make a collective. And by then we met Lore, who is not here right now, but it's a, you know, key collaborator for the show that we are doing and for everything that we've been doing the past years. And by the time of the creation of Amixer, the film Dance Permit Denied, that maybe you saw, I think, in New Images. So that's our first film as a collective. It was already in the making when the collective started, and we took the assignment together of actually making it accessible for audiences outside Peru, because we had our first cut that is not the one that is being distributed, and that's why the film is called Dance Permit Denied, because it used, you know, the first version was just Dance Permit. So that's the beginnings of Amixer, and that work was premiered here in ITFA 2 years ago.
Okay. So,
also, just to say very important things about what we do, we are not just producing artworks, we are also part of many networks in Peru and also in Latin America, we could say. And we organize events, like we have, I don't know how to say, like we have events that we are organizing that is called La Futura Ya Pasó, which means the future already happened. And it is a very particular space for the makers in Peru right now to be able to showcase works that involve digital culture, like for example live coding, but also experimental short films made with social media or glitch content, and of course also performances, live performances, music. Yeah,
I presented a video game in that event. Yeah.
Nice. And so you've given a number of different talks over the last number of days, or had a chance to speak to the broader audience here at IFA Doc Lab. And one of the things that comes up a lot when you're speaking around what you're doing is like coming from this political movement of anti-futurism, because you're making an anti-futurist musical with Feedback. And so maybe just give a bit more context for what is anti-futurism.
I think, first of all, it's a provocation, right, to say we are anti-something. For whatever anti-something you are, it is already creating this negation, right, of something. And we've discussed this a lot when we were deciding for the title, for example, because the performance, the artwork can survive without this subtitle, but it's important political statement to put into the conversation the fact that there is a vision of future that is the hegemonic that we can gravitate towards. But if we reject that vision of the future, then we still have other futures possible. Like, for example, Andean futurism, that is the one that we specifically feel like we belong to for this specific performance. But we are aware of the other people developing their own versions of future, you know, like tropical Amazon futurism, Afrofuturism. So Andean futurism is also part of all of these anti-futurist movements that are trying to decenter the white male perspective of future, but also Eurocentric or from the USA or for Asia, you know, very specific visions of the future that involve collapse of the society as we know it because of over-extraction of resources, and rather trying to imagine what if everything was different. So it really challenges concepts as basic as time, right? Our understanding of time. So one thing that I was saying earlier that I think resonated with a lot of people was that we are collectively experiencing grief of the life as we knew it just a few years ago. Like even before the pandemic, there was a kind of lifestyles that we had. And now because of war and escalation of conflict worldwide and riots, we seem to be accepting that the life we had, it's not an option anymore. Like we have entered a new era, a new stage in our society, and the geopolitical order is being restructured because of active war, and we are all grieving the life we had. And it feels like the end of the world, and it feels like the apocalypse. So something interesting to take into account that anti-futuristic approaches do is remind you that apocalypse already happened to other societies, right? So many societies that were destroyed by different forms of violence and, for example, colonization in the case of the territory that is now known as America, They already went through genocides, and we are today here living proof of that. We are the result of rape and slavery, and we carry that within our genome, you know. And I think all of these conversations are extremely relevant, you know. Talking about genome right now, it's super important because wars are being fought, they have been being fought about genome dominance. So when we talk about supremacy, which is something that we cannot deny is happening, certain projects like post-humanism, transhumanism, have this political criteria into who is developing this narrative and what does this even mean for the future of humanity, who is having babies, who is not having babies, what information, genetic information is being passed forward. So anti-futuristic approaches are necessary because they challenge this sense of technological inevitability.
Nice. And love to hear any other thoughts or comments of this political movement of anti-futurism and how working on this project allowed you to express that in some ways, or just any thoughts or reflections on that.
I think we have different coexisting stances on what anti-futurism resonates for each of us. I think Lore has been doing these last few talks in Ecuador, presenting the work with her own ways of approaching anti-futurism, which is very interesting to share from her. And also from my side, I believe that we are being very aware of our relation to our connection between both the traditional and the digital generations, and how the migrant past also affects us and our present as well. And from that both things, we know that our approach to art and our approach to become a voice needs to be very, you know, very conscious of where we are placed and for when we're speaking from, because we know that we add one more layer of how to view the world, which it needs to be there, while, you know, at the same time coexisting with other versions from people with other ways of understanding their traditions and their connection to digitality, virtuality, and technologies. We are in this moment, and I think, like, for me, like, the way to approach, it's also a lot of irony, but from the irony still trying to, you know, scratch and find some new ways of at least colliding with, you know, while having tough dichotomy. And from there, we can still build on for next work. So this is why I'm very excited to use the complete title as a way to understand where we're standing and how to move forward from it.
Look, I think, like, our culture has been so smacked, like, historically, that, I don't know, every approach we have to art is going to be always, like, the opposite of what the culture that, like, imposed the concept of future to my culture, is going to be the opposite. So our approach is kind of revolutionary. It's kind of noisy. And I think that with my work, I have always been, like, kind of annoyance to some viewers and so some type of views. So talking about how I feel the movie, I think this movie shows a completely different view about technology and the new media that is typically not the aesthetic that this media was created for. So I think that's where the anti-futuristic and anti-new media, that title comes from there. Yeah.
Yeah, there's a certain sense of nostalgia for this kind of vaporwave or early glitch art of the internet and GeoCities. You kind of have this nostalgia going back. And there's been a lot of kind of reflecting on the internet projects here this year that are really kind of looking back at what has the internet wrought to society.
Yes. Fun fact, I started working visually with Coco on another previous collective called Peru 2092, and we used to do vaporwavy art. Yeah.
And very political, and also going back to our sense of Peruvianness and what is it about? Do we even need nationalism? You know, things besides, like, that is trying to stitch in, you know? So we really were already, the irony is there, and now it's like the ways of going past that, I think, is in this work specifically.
I knew the work from Aaron like before they became part of a mixer because of the work that they were doing together in this other collective. So I think it's important to name that because it's important to acknowledge that we had that. Like we had and we have a community. So other than not having budget from the Ministry of Culture or having it be very hard to access, we managed to create spaces for it and we had a healthy ecosystem before the pandemic.
Yeah, and just a follow-on to the era of the music, do you consider that to be like chiptune music or what kind of genre of music would you describe it as?
No, I mean, I think for each structure of the film, we decided to divide it into like 6 moments or so. There's a different approach to each of them so that we have not only a sense of progression, but we also give justice to some of the references that made a mark and that resonate with the themes. So there is like, at the beginning, there's this sense of like a video game, old school sense of idle sounds, you know, and ambiences from there. But then we progress to something that we wanted to do, like a slow reggaeton with some digitalness and nostalgia, which is very vaporwavy style. Then we move on to something that is very much performatic and with a sense of like a Fibonacci structure, which it adds up progressively on the repetition and the poetry side. And from there, I think we built a melody that is very much based on a very important song that is from Iron Pito, right?
Iron Pito.
So it's like another one of the references that reflects back on the Andean traditions. And then
It's a gender called Huayno. So in this scene, which is the recreation of the world, the text is super important and there is a language barrier. So I want to take the opportunity to also talk the words that are said in the film. So that scene starts by, in the beginning, there was only one point, and that point was you. We talked to you about you changed your username and you changed your avatar, and now you think you're happy, but you still have so much to load, to charge, right? And so by one pixel, we start building a point cloud, and then the point cloud transforms into polygons, and the polygons transform into meshes and volumes. And what the text is saying, this Huayno is saying, you must be a point before you are a line. You must be a line before you are a plane. And if there is no plane, there is no volume. So it's making a parallel between understanding the physical reality that we experience as human beings through that deconstruction of that experience of being alive, that the beverage, the plant technology gave to you, but that you could only get into words by your experience of digitality. So in a sense, it's also about how we end up in a feedback between the technologies that we create becoming a mirror of ourselves and allowing us to understand deep philosophical questions about the conception on a molecular level of what is real. So at the end of the movie, there is the moment of catharsis when the characters come back after the digital nightmare, because there is a techno moment after the Huayno, where it's like the bad trip moment. And when the characters come back to the place where they originally came from, they have this catharsis, they understand everything, taka, 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 taka. And then they start making parallels between what is organic and what is digital. So there is the binary code of computing program, which is based on 2 digits, 0 and 1. And then there is a genetic code of the human genome, which is based in 4 letters, so 4 characters, right? So it's A, G, C, and T. So the last character in understanding what just happened combines both of them, both the binary and the quaternary code. And we are just trying, you know, by the end of the film, the characters ask themselves if life is itself a simulation or a dream, because it's all apparently a fractal, you know, life imitating itself. So by being mestizo Gen Zs who are carrying this ancestral knowledge and heritage, but being very active within video games and online culture, having these two colliding and creating new knowledge out of it, not taking a position of adversary, rather this is what we became by being both is what we are, like we are a contradiction.
Beautiful. Yeah, and I love all of the elaboration of the piece and hearing you speak about it, because I really enjoyed the piece and watching it, and I found myself waking up or going to bed last night and waking up singing the songs in my head, and it's just like very catchy tunes. But I saw it in VR first and then saw the Dome version. I usually start by, you know, kind of going through where it began, but we sort of jumped into it already. But maybe we could take a bit of a step back and, like, where did this project begin? Like, what was the catalyst for you to create this musical that is fusing together all these aspects of ritual and these philosophical concepts and anti-futurism and the vaporwave and the music? And there's a lot that's tied together, but I'm just curious, like, where did it begin?
I mean, like I mentioned before, it's gone through many stages, but I would need to identify the earlier moments, you know, when this concept of feedback came to me was in a life coding workshop that I took by a life coder named Flor de Fuego. She's an Argentinian artist. And she was teaching me and others a programming language for visuals that is called Hydra. So we were learning to program through very small variables and tweaking some numbers, some values there, how to make visuals, you know, like trippy visuals. Then I was introduced to the concept of feedback, like the input is the output. And this made all of sense for me for what I was watching in video games and humans, specifically in acting code. So because I'm an actor by education, I noticed that there was this NPC behavior going on in TikTok. And this was the beginning of the research. So Lupe and Isa, who are the other performers in the film, we got together in my studio. Kokompi was there as well. And we spent a couple of days watching TikToks and just replicating trends, literally just copying the trends, uploading them for our private studio of the physical language. So I would say it came from life coding, and it immediately transformed into an embodied concept of what feedback is, which means there is a real human behavior like this.
You're waving your hand.
Yeah, I'm waving my hand. And then there is the staged video game version of that, which is a representation of the action.
A little bit more uncanny.
And then what I've just done, which is the imitation of the imitation, right? I just imitated a video game. I didn't become a video game when I did that. I just imitated the imitation of me. So that feedback, that was the point that started all of the rest of the conversations. That idea of reality, physical and digital, feeding back into each other.
And it ended up being the first moment pretty much in the film, right? So we start in this uncanny, as you said, way of approaching like a new user welcoming. The music is also like in this repetition and this sense of, oh, you're here. And the voices do not really match a regular voice. It's kind of a mixed tone. So it's already something is not quite right there. And that's why I think that from that starting point, we decided to continue the sense of the ritual. And as a VR ritual, and to make the people feel comfortable about the 360, that's why we also picked this location, and we made it so that it could be already immersive from the right beginning, and from there start deconstructing all of the sense of belonging. So the first sense of belonging in the teepee, no, in this structure, can change continuously in so many ways, and the people who are following you also change their costumes, their way of behaving, their sense of being. So it's like we first build the structure, the starting point, and we progressively make you go way far from that.
And so just a follow-on process question is that as you're putting together this piece, did you have a script of like the beginning, middle, and end, or were you just building it out as you went along and then seeing what would come next?
I was bullied because of how many versions of the script there was. we had some interactive script that was just so out of our budget. But it's a script that I spent months on writing, you know. But it was unrealistic. We couldn't afford it. We couldn't afford to build it, and we couldn't afford to archive it. So we had to take a different direction, and it was completely rewritten just a few, I want to say days, before the shooting, actually.
Okay. And I noticed that in the credits, Sarah, you had received some funding from Peru, and then you had a message at the end saying that we really want this money to come back. And so maybe give a bit more context for the funding that was there at the beginning but is no longer there for anybody.
Yes, so there was this type of fund until the 2022. And it was for new media projects and other type of projects from the Peruvian government. But that was the last year that it was there. They removed it. I think they didn't provide enough explanation or sense of, like, from the people who are doing this type of works. They didn't get a chance to, you know, actually talk about why they would change it or transform it. So they just removed it completely, along with other funds. So in general, the government is cutting funds, as it happens in so many places in the world, and especially in Latin America, we have seen this coming through. So we decided that the least that we could do is to have some words that could tell that this is just a small thing, that from all the works that are currently happening, besides the lack of funding that we have seen until now, that this thing is just a small thing of the whole ecosystem that should get, you know, once again, a recognition and a support.
Yeah, and when I talk to different creators around the process of creating different formats of VR, 360 video, you can shoot it and pretty quickly get into headset, and there might be need some stitching or cleanup, but you can more or less see a pretty quick turnaround from what you had just shot. But when you start to get into the more CGI elements, then it's a lot more time intensive. You're putting together scenes, and then the turnaround from like what you imagine what it might be to then actually making it is a lot longer in terms of doing that. And so just curious to hear a little bit more around that process as you were going through, and you said you're working on the interactive script, but you need to lock it to know what it is, but then you have to collaborate with your other collaborators and the collective to be able to have their job to be able to do. So I'm just curious to hear a bit about that more iterative process as you get more into the CGI parts.
We didn't have like a clear workflow to do it. We just, like, we were in the present. We were, like, solving it while we were running. So we started working, like, asynchronically, and I was in Peru. They were in Spain at that moment. So first thing, like, our difference is, like, big. So it was, for me, like, a really, really early 4 a.m. in the morning work. So my brain was in another space in that moment, and we were trying to get those ideas that we have with the resources that we have. Thankfully, there exist like softwares that are free and some softwares that are fitting our budget. So we have to create a lot of stuff. I was juggling like 3 or 4 softwares at the same time to not only to create, but to preview. And the preview was one of the worst parts of the process for me, because I have to render, see, and like the whole first part, I didn't have an Oculus to see what I was doing. I couldn't even see it, really. I was just projecting what could be. And then I had the opportunity to get an Oculus I borrowed from a good friend of mine, and I started seeing like, oh, damn, that's what I'm doing. And yes, what were you going
to
say?
Just to give credits to the amount of research that Aaron made for the 3D components of the film. We shot with a camera that has a stereoscopic. So by stitching the output of 6.5 SD cards, we get one very heavy MP4 that has metadata, one eye in top of the other, that all together put in the right headset would give you a 3D film, right? Made out of 2 360 videos. So when we tried to seamlessly unite that with a 3D generated content based on photogrammetries of those performers, it was much more challenging than we envisioned. And Aaron did a lot of work on building an 8K, then we lowered our expectations of 5.K, then we lowered our expectations, okay, 4K stereoscopic render in 360 inside Unreal, ne?
It was Unreal, and we used, just to give credit, there's a Russian guy that created a plugin to render in 360, and that plugin solved my life. Like, we found it, and it was like, damn, this is the answer, man. We have to get this.
Stereoscopic. This is important to highlight. It's not just rendering 360. It's 360 stereoscopic in the dimensions that we were needing. So it was a very big challenge.
So I have to get into the plugin Telegram to understand, because the instructions were in Russian and the English version was a little bit difficult to follow. So I just had to read and watch videos to land it. It was fun, man, but I remember that there were moments that we were trying to meet the deadline of Tabacalera, and I don't know, you could see it, I couldn't see it. I could see it later, like in the next version, because we had like 2-3 versions till we get to ITFA, Tabacalera finales del 2024 y el inicio de este año.
And there also was the body capturing, which was also something to add and test, which like equipment that Claudix had. And from there, you did a lot of recordings of a lot of body capturing, you know, performing, and to adapt that so that we could then break it. Because as you see in the film, it's like some moments feel very smooth and natural of the body movement, but others are completely wacky and crazy.
Yeah, there's one of my favorite parts when we had a name for that scene. The Senda Singo, well, there was a part, maybe continuing also the idea of simulacra and simulacra, that you were talking about the imitation, imitating the imitations, so it becomes reality. There is a part where we are fusing like NPC movements, 3Ds making the capture of the movement of the person, and I don't know, the dichotomy is crazy, yeah.
Yeah, I wanted to hone in on a phrase that was the digital quantum non-locality that you had elaborated on a little bit last night, but also how that there's a digital technology that's impacting our consciousness, but also these mushrooms, fungi, other psychedelics or other ritual substances that are causing these altered states of consciousness that are tapping into these more ancestral knowledge that is being replicated by science, but it kind of predates that. And so I'm just curious if you wanted to elaborate on that. Digital quantum non-locality.
Yeah, so it's something that we've been interested and talking, you know, it kind of naturally got into the script, although it was not part of what we talked a lot, like including a contrast of quantum knowledge and indigenous knowledge. But because me as a creator, Lore as well, we have this interest in how new approaches to quantum knowledge is, you know, challenging what traditional physics told us in a subatomic level, which is very interesting because you can get some of these clickbaits about what quantum theory is saying and make out crazy new understandings of reality. Like a lot of people after watching this film, Everything Everywhere All at Once, start talking about quantum jumping realities, for example, you know. And there's other film in the Planetarium exhibition that was talking about how observation changes the state of reality in a sense. But I think it's important to take it down to what it is. It's photon level event that has been observed by quantum physics. So the one that you are referring to is one principle that won the scientist of the Academy of the Science of Vienna the Nobel Prize in Physics in the year 2023, which is non-locality realness. So you cannot accept local realness because we have proven now through the process of quantum entanglement that there is communication happening faster than the speed of light by particles that are having this interconnectedness, this entanglement event happening between them, which is a good argument for multi-dimension theory that quantum physics is proposing, that it's not just X, Y, Z dimensions that we are perceiving as human beings who have the hardware to only perceive that, but that apparently other observations of very small scale of the universe actually show us that there has to be other dimensions in which things are happening, you know. So when we say digital quantum non-locality, we're trying to create a parallel between this concept of non-locality and we also creating these holographic copies of ourselves, of our consciousness in these avatars. We are putting it there. So not to be, not to be, not to be, no estar, not to be is what we are doing in the digital quantum non-locality. We are there, but we are not there, and it feels artificial, but at the same time, it is our reality. And when we come back from this digital quantum non-locality to our apparent realness, we don't longer trust the realness of it because we have been shown the holographic nature of that experience, which now is reflecting back on us, thinking that this might be another experience that is being projected from a different dimension as well.
There's a, I don't know if it's parallel to Everything Everywhere All at Once, but there was a trend in TikTok of shifting, and there were tutorials to do that kind of astral projections to, I don't know, go to the Harry Potter universe, and it's kind of a non-locality also practice. I don't know, it also comes to the subject because popular media is part of our language and memes and trends and stuff.
Nice, yeah. And in this piece, I think the lyrics and the philosophical thought and the music, I'm curious to hear around this collaboration between the composition and the music, but also the lyrics writing and how that process went, because it is a musical, so you have this whole journey that you gave a little bit of this overall arc that you're taking people on, but maybe talk around that process of collaborating on the writing of the lyrics along with the creating of the music, and if the music came first, if the lyrics came first, or they came at the same time.
I think we had some clear sentences as a voiceover material, as like a narrator, which were at the beginning and at the end, they started coming back because they are very related. But after that, we knew that we needed to build a song which would convey the main concept of what are we dealing with, this dichotomy, right? So that song, which I first started with the sense of the instrumental about it, and we gathered some references. Then Claudix provided a lot of possible sentences and words in a sometimes very comprehensive rhythm and sometimes very huge. And I was trying to figure out how to make it more catchy, how to make it fit in a way that we could repeat some words and we still get the sense of it. And we discussed, and I even recorded myself. I am a very bad singer, but I recorded myself singing some of the lyrics, and then they said, oh, this kind of makes sense. Let's see how it is. But I think once we finally recorded that song and we heard it back, it was like, oh, it was like this. We didn't even know, because, you know, I first did it like only like a instrumental melody, but it's very different once you get it with real voices. And from there, we decided to keep working on the rest of the lyrics very much together. Gather some sentences according to the concept of that specific moment, and from there rebuilding it so that it could be more appealing to what the structure means and how we use other sound techniques to make it, you know, diverse and fit in the overall. Yeah,
and I would say that it was very familiar process because Kokompi and me have been doing this kind of collaborations for years outside of the works that I mentioned before. So I would say that it is our creative, I don't know, it's our creative collaboration that is so well established that allows us to very easily accept suggestions, changes, and going back and forward on one word sometimes, you know, revisiting new proposals all of the time. So it's not, okay, I give you input one, you give me input two, and then we settle on input three. No, we are both very obsessive. So we went many times over and over, choosing very carefully each word so that it carried the maximum amount of semiotic meaning in the minimum amount of words and sounds. Yeah.
But definitely the music structure is the one that gave the overall timing of the whole. So at one moment we knew that we had recorded the first and the last scene, which we made it, in real time and everything. And I used some drafts, music drafts and some structures from that. But after that, we had to build like 10 more minutes of music because that was the basis. And from there, we started building the 3D and 2D. There was always like this track that could help. And while the visuals were developing, I would see the music back and keep feeding it with more information and adapting it. So yeah, that's how we made it.
More feedback, as it were.
I was about to say that. It was a feedbacky process because it's feedbacky. He sent me the music. I sent him the video with the music. He sent me the video of the music with the new music, and I sent him the new music with the new media. And yeah,
all the time, like it's been a loop going. Like, so we have so much files that we've shared just because, since we are not following a production schedule of any business model. You know, the person who's been mostly in charge of the production, Lore, is also a creative within the team. So this process of going back and forward involves her as well. And there is no pressure of a very strong deadline. We didn't work with a hard deadline in mind. You know, we had small hackathon moments for ourselves, like the moments where we were kind of in residency, like when we did the mock-up, we had very few days with this good computer, but then Aaron would have to connect at 4 a.m., right? But out of that, because we are a collective, that gave us the possibility to know what our limits are. And I think we are all very obsessive with communicating a very specific atmosphere that is at the same time, you know, it has a political meaning, but it's also joyful. I think that's something very important for all of us. So we gave it extra amount of love. Like, we would put extra, you know, every time we could say, okay, it's finished, but then we're like, oh, what if we change this? And it's because I feel like that is something that collective structure gave us, you know, like we know our boundaries and we are communicating with each other, baby, is this too much? Do you think we can look at this or should we just leave it like that? And there is no right or wrong answers. Like, we keep checking in with each other to know at what point of the weaving process all of our media are, since we were working in different teams simultaneously, and only by the end did we have the final video versions, the final rendered versions, and the final music. It just finished all together at the end of the post-processing.
Beautiful. Well, I really, really enjoyed the piece. I loved watching it. And yeah, it's one that's going to stick with me, and also this conversation and the larger implications. And I always like to end by asking people to sort of peer into the future in a way. And it feels kind of paradoxical to ask some anti-futurist to think about the future. But I do want to lean into this lineage of the global south, of these different futurisms, as you think around how the future is already colonized in a certain way. And so just curious, as you start to think around like the potential of what we could have collectively as humanity working together and something that's different than what we have now. Just curious to see what that vision is and how you describe it.
From my perspective, that is my first time being here and in this kind of works. For me, I think that it's really important that we keep working in our country to empower those visions, because there is a lot of really cool art there, but there are not platforms to expose it. So I'm just thinking, like, when I arrive to Peru, what I'm doing to kind of share all that I'm like learning here. So that's my plan. Yes,
I think the same. The things that we learn from our own processes that are very much self-learning, and all of these ways of handling it with small help and as much as we can doing the best that we could. I think there are some things that we can definitely share with our groups, our communities, and from there see how we can move forward, I feel, between distribution, independent distribution, and with alternative ways of learning. I think that's something that is right now starting to feel right to continue in that path, because we have been doing it parallelly, but now we finally can say, okay, we don't need to do more renders of feedback anymore. I hope. So we do have some time to share with other people who are, you know, right there making new projects that we already know that will be amazing. So we just want to be, you know, with them.
For me, this one is, I don't know, do you want an honest answer?
Yeah, sure.
I feel like things are going to get more violent before they get more peaceful. I have a pattern recognition brain, which makes it very hard to ignore the amount of events that are intertwined with the turn of to the right, you know, and autocratic governments worldwide. And I just see how even polarized political parties are agreeing in certain things, like natalistic control. This, I feel like, is breathing in my ear as a person with an uterus. It feels like it's, you know, all governments worldwide are very worried about the decrease on natal rate, you know, not so many people being born as people dying. And this is having a huge impact on the rights of women and people who can give birth, you know. Of course, there's also movements on targeting minorities like the queer communities and also just migrants in everywhere. I mean, in the USA, you're experiencing this. People is disappearing into prisons, you know. And I feel like we are so bombarded by violence everywhere. It's hard to take care of what's closer to us. So maybe the future will look like grieving. Maybe the future is us looking back at this very same moment and saying, how could we let all these people be killed with our money? How did we ignore the fact that they took so many thousands of people away from my district that year, you know? Or other kind of problems that I feel like are manufactured and that are related with technocracy, like, it's related to what I was saying before, but, you know, this gender war right now, the rate dropping in people being born is also related with the fact that there is a huge mistrust in the patriarchal system, you know. A lot of people is refusing to give birth to workers for this capitalism that shows in more everyday decisions. So I think they have an impact on the future. For more like a personal approach, me as creators, I will get inspired by what my colleagues said about back home, we get the opportunity to inspire. So having access to all this amount of information and having the privilege to have perspective in order to connect some dots, in this case also provide us with responsibility of channeling these thoughts, you know, articulating them, systematizing knowledge, sharing it, and also putting our energy and our time and our attention in this attention economy into making more tools accessible. For example, yesterday, Avinash Shanga, our collaborator for the DOM version of the film, was telling us about this new hardware that is going to be released next year that apparently is very hackable and apparently is going to be also affordable. Affordable for, of course, US and Europe currencies. But this makes me think that in a couple of years, when people here get bored of it and we finally get access to it in our market, when we do have hackable hardware, it might be the new tool for, you know, a new wave of creators in the Global South that will not need to rely on a Facebook account that is collecting your data, that is creating viewpoints out of your home, and you forcing your audiences to get on these headsets that are collecting their face tracking information. You know, like the way we're experiencing new media right now is through centralized big tech. And I feel like the future will be like the reivindication to us having access and control to both the hardware and the software. Like, this is for me the best that we can aspire to.
Yeah, and Avinash must be referring to Valve's Steam Frame, which was going to be running on Linux and have lots of different ports. And so, yeah, it's very exciting to have something that's going to be on a, like an open source software that feels like a really auspicious time to be coming right now when all these other things are also launching something that's actually going to be able to be hacked a little bit. Yeah, anything else that's left unsaid that you'd like to say to the broader immersive community? Any final thoughts you have?
We're going to be needing a lot of solidarity in our community. Like Cocompi said, in Peru, the award that allowed us to create this film is no longer there, which means that other creators in Peru have already lost the opportunity to even attempt to go through the learning process that we have gone through. So we're going to need solidarity. I know that funding is right now disappearing everywhere, but I feel like certain countries, especially with a colonizer history, have organizations that are sort of cultural ambassadors of their countries. And I don't know if someone is listening to this and they feel called by the words I'm saying, is share that privilege with others. Share the mic, give the opportunity to other person to self-represent. Don't travel to a country whose history and problematics you are unaware and just make a film, call it collaboratory, and then leave and profit out of it. Actually, give the space for other creators to direct their own stories. We have the capability to do it.
Any final thoughts?
Yeah, I just want to say that it's been a privilege to be part of this project and part of this collective. It's been so hard for me to find a place to make this kind of art. And I don't know, man, I'm so happy to be with them.
Any other final thoughts? Okay. Awesome. Well, thanks so much for joining me here on the podcast to talk a lot more around feedback and anti-futurist musical. Like I said, I really enjoyed this piece, and it gave me this sense of nostalgia of like going back to another era that really encouraged people to be creative and weird and experimental and expressing their identity and their ideas and culture, something that seems to be filtered through algorithms these days. So it's nice to be embedded and immersed into a vision of this present or future or all these deeper themes that you're exploring in the piece. And the just also love the music and how it was very catchy and it was always surprising me for where it was going to go next. I didn't know what was going to happen. It took me on a whole journey that I really appreciated, showing the strength of how VR can take you on this kind of journey of sorts. So, yeah, thanks again for joining me on the podcast to help break it all down.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Is there any song in particular that you liked?
I'd have to listen to it and be like da 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 da. I can't. I have to listen to it.
The one that is like the more. Yeah.
Can you hum it a little bit?
No to be, no to be, no estar. Se siente artificial.
Yeah. I think that was the one. Yeah, I don't usually remember lyrics. I just get the tune in my head. So yeah, if you release a soundtrack, I'd probably buy it and listen to it since it is very catchy and it takes me back. But yeah.
Thank you.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much.
Thank you.
That's all that we have for today, and I just wanted to thank you for listening to the Voices of VR podcast. If you enjoy the podcast, then please do spread the word, tell your friends, and consider becoming a member of the Patreon. This is a listener-supported podcast, so I do rely upon donations from people like yourself in order to continue to bring this coverage. You can become a member and donate today at patreon.com/voicesofvr. Thanks for listening.